but just doesn't know what to do. So if mindfulness is saying, instruct me, tell me what to do and I'll serve you. You're not getting clear instructions. Sometimes you say, I should just let things be. Sometimes you say, I should watch the breath. Sometimes you say, I should just go and think about the dinner this lunchtime. What am I supposed to do? Please tell me. If that's your problem, then give clear instructions to your mindfulness. Very clear instructions. This is my goal. This is what you're supposed to do. Do it. And it's amazing just how the mindfulness becomes sharp, how the mindfulness becomes effective, and how the mindfulness acts as the guide to achieving your goal. And it stops all the distractions and the diversions. It knows where you are on the journey and keeps you on track. That's the job of mindfulness. And from that mindfulness, actually, this, I should have said the third Iddhipada, relates to this third controlling faculty, and also relates to the third Iddhipada also relates to the fourth controlling faculty as well. The third Iddhipada is like sustaining the mind on the job, keeping the mind on it. Because you can have a goal, you can have energy, but you've got to keep the mind on the job. Which is, mindfulness helps with that, which is the third of the five controlling powers, and also the fourth controlling power, which is samadhi. Keeping going, sustaining attention. You have samadhi, say, even in the present moment, if you keep your attention on the present moment. And the present moment is always what you're aware of. Then you can call that samadhi. Still quite coarse samadhi, but much more refined than normal people. If you can keep the attention in silence and maintain the attention in the silence, that's the samadhi. You're sustaining your attention on the goal. If you can sustain the attention on the breath, that's samadhi. Sustained attention. Sometimes we call it concentration. What is concentration anyway? You take up something to read and you keep your mind on it. That's why we call it concentration. And the mind doesn't move from the task. You're sustaining the attention. That's samadhi. And if you could sustain the samadhi, sustain the attention on the samadhi nimitta, then you're really buzzing along. People get samadhi nimittas. But it's the people who can sustain their attention on them are the ones who get into jhanas. And that samadhi, that sustaining attention, that keeping the mind on the task, is the third Iddhipada, the third road to success. And it's also the fourth controlling faculty, which is aided by the third controlling faculty of mindfulness. Those two go together. The mindfulness is the guide. And the samadhi is like the result of that mindfulness. Keeping the attention on the goal. Keeping the attention on the object. And you find you can do that. You find that after a while of committing yourself to that goal, sort of things happen. Success starts to occur. You find you can keep attention, say, on the breath for long periods of time. It happens because it's a natural process. And you find that that becomes more and more effortless as you go along. Sometimes, though, there's problems. There's difficulties, there's blockages. And that's where the fourth Iddhipada and the fifth controlling faculty come in. Fifth controlling faculty is wisdom. Fourth Iddhipada is investigation. You see, investigation produces that wisdom. It's as if in your meditation you've got your goal very clear, you've got energy, you apply your mind on the task, but it doesn't work. Something's blocking you. You've got all these other three Iddhipadas there, but it's not working. At that point, you should always ask why. Investigate. And I've given this simile so often because it's so true to my own meditation, and I'm sure it's true to yours as well. sometimes when I'm going along, I've got a clear goal, I've got the energy up, I'm applying my mind, I get an obstacle, it's like banging my head against a brick wall. Just can't go through, can't go through, can't go through. The reason is because I'm not investigating. Investigating means I stand back a little bit and look. And all the time, I find that just to my left is a nice doorway. And I've been banging my head against that wall, when all I need to do is just to walk a little bit to the left and go through the door. And it feels so stupid. And when you go through that door, you're on the other side of the wall, and you're buzzing along in deep meditation. So often it's because lack of investigation, lack of seeing clearly, lack of developing the wisdom faculty. What I was talking about yesterday, about developing insight into meditation, to see where the brick walls are, the obstacles, the defilements, and to see where the gaps in those walls are, the wisdom, the insights. For example, there's one of the great gaps in so many of these walls is just present moment awareness. Because so often you bang against a brick wall, bang against a brick wall, and so often it's because in a very subtle and deep way I've gone off into future or past. Expectations. Or just lingering on what's just happened. And I just got to sharpen my attention in the present moment. Doesn't matter what's just happened, doesn't matter what's going to happen the next moment. Let the next moment wait until then. I'm just going to completely be absolutely pinpoint present. So many of my obstacles disappear when I get to that pinpoint present moment awareness. And just go straight through the wall, basically. There's no obstacle anymore. Sometimes the obstacle is this controller, this doer. And that's a big stretch of wall which comes up in many parts of your meditation. I'm going to force myself through this wall. I'm going to do this. And you keep giving yourself orders. And you keep sort of getting frustrated. You keep talking to yourself. You keep giving instructions. The investigation says, what's the problem? What's the problem? There, the controller. Wisdom sees what the problem is. You are disturbing the meditation. Shh, be quiet. Wisdom. Just like Ajahn Chah, I mentioned this to one person during the interviews, a couple of people I think, like Ajahn Chah's beautiful simile of the still forest pool. That's one of the most ones I like the most. It's not explained in full in that little booklet which I think Jack Cornfield and Paul Breiter wrote with that same title, Still Forest Pool. The way I remember Ajahn Chah explaining that was, it's like when he went into the jungles and forests when he was on what we call Tudong in Thailand, Charaka in Pali, just wandering. He'd always try and find like a stretch of water when it got to the late afternoon, because you needed water to bathe. And when you're walking through the jungle or the forest, it's hot. And you know, if you don't bathe in the evening, you sort of really feel so dirty and sticky all night. So you want to try and find some place to bathe in the evening, but also you need water to drink. And so you'd find like a pool in the forest, or in a lake or some well or somewhere, and then you camp there by the night, a little ways away from the lake. And this is what Ajahn Chah said he used to do. And sometimes after drinking, after bathing, when he was all settled, if it was still reasonably early, he would like to sit in meditation on the edge of the forest pool. And he said that sometimes he used to sit so still, with his eyes open, that he started to see all these jungle animals coming out, because they wanted to bathe and drink as well. He said they'd only come out if he was still, because jungle animals would be far more afraid of human beings than human beings were afraid of those animals. They're very timid creatures in the jungle. And it's only if you sat very still would these animals come out. And when they came out, they'd look around and sniff around to see if it was safe. And if they detected him, then they would just go away again. But if he was absolutely still, animals wouldn't be able to detect him. They wouldn't be able to smell him. And they'd come out and drink. And some, he said, would drink right next to him and play in the water right in front of him, as if he wasn't there. Because he was that still, to an animal he was invisible. He said sometimes he was that still that after the ordinary creatures came out, some really weird and strange jungle creatures came out, whose names he didn't know. He never experienced such creatures before. His parents had never told him about such things. Some really weird and strange creatures came out to drink. But only if he was absolutely still. This is a wonderful, beautiful simile of what happens in deep meditation. The lake stands for your mind. The very primordial metaphor of your mind being like a lake. You're just sitting, mindfulness is sitting beside it, just watching. If you give any orders, you're not being still. And these beautiful creatures, samadhi nimittas and jhanas, they will only come out if you're absolutely still. Sometimes they'll come out to sniff around and you go, wow. And then they hurl back into the forest again and they don't come out at all. They come out and you just look at them from the corner of your eyes, they know it, and they go away again. You can't move if you want these beings to come out and play. But if you're absolutely still, no controller, no doing, no saying, no moving, no doing anything else, absolutely still, samadhi nimittas come out, they look around, they sniff the air, and they think no one is watching, and they come out and they play right in front of you. But if you move an eyelid, they go away again. If you're absolutely still, they remain. And the ordinary ones come out first of all, and then the very beautiful ones come out, and the very strange and wonderful ones come out and play right in front of you. But only if you're absolutely still. Those amazing and wonderful ones, the ones your parents never told you the names of, the ones you thought these sorts of things never imagined they could exist. They're so strange and they're so weird and they're so wonderful. These are the jhanas who come out and play right in front of you. Only if you're absolutely still. It's a wonderful simile from Ajahn Chah, which is a measure of his wisdom, of his understanding about the world of the mind. This is how the mind works. And that wisdom is a tremendous power. You get to understand how the mind works. The investigation uncovers this, and the wisdom remembers this, and informs mindfulness that when you get to these stages, be quiet. Quietness, stillness is so important. So important that you are still. And it becomes a power in your meditation, this wisdom. It becomes a way of encouraging and developing this wisdom through this investigation. Whenever you get to an obstacle, don't just wait to ask the teacher. Don't just keep on banging away. Each one of you has wisdom. None of you is deficient in it. It's just a matter of applying it, cultivating that quality of the mind which can see clearly. And you see, there's the great monks I've known in my years in Thailand especially. You see that how they've developed that investigating faculty of the mind, and how they develop all these amazing skillful means and stories which are so powerful in overcoming the obstacles to meditation. So these become the five controlling faculties, the five things which control and guide meditation. Confidence, faith in yourself, in the teachings or the method, and the fact that the goal is worth achieving. It's the energy which arises as a result of that, which makes the meditation happy and good fun. like having a strong cup of coffee, the world looks wonderful. Sati, the guide in this meditation, which remembers the instructions, is always looking out to make sure you're on the track. Your samadhi, this is sustaining ability of the mind, sustaining attention on the goal, and the wisdom, which sort of eradicates, dispels all the problems and obstacles as they come up. Five controlling faculties, otherwise explained as the four roads to power. Getting a goal, a clear goal, an achievable goal, and making it very clear to yourself. Either a goal for the whole 9-day meditation retreat, or a goal for today, or certainly a goal for the next meditation. Psyching yourself up, this is what I'm going to do. And on that goal, building up the energy, the second Nidipada, sustaining the mind on that goal, keeping going, keeping going, keeping going, with the confidence you will achieve if you keep going, and the investigation of vimamsa, which is always looking out to see obstacles and finding new ways to get around them, looking for that door on the left or the ladder to the right, which can get over that obstacle and wall without having to bang, 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 just with sheer brute force and willpower. So those are the 40 Nidipadas, the five roads to success, which are very important instructions in meditation, which shows you how it all works. So, has anyone got any comments or questions about this morning's talk on four roads to success, the five controlling faculties? Yes, you were asking about when investigation should be done in the middle of the meditation. For example, you've just gone wandering off and then suddenly you catch yourself and you bring yourself back to your meditation object. It is very useful to investigate then and find out what went on, why. Why does the mind go wandering off? See what's happening there, because it's a new experience, it's fresh in your mind. And you can look back and see mindfulness wasn't strong enough. The gatekeeper had gone to sleep, basically had nodded off. He didn't know what you were doing, or at least he'd forgotten his instructions. Secondly, you wandered off because you weren't content with what you were doing. Even if the gatekeeper nods off, if you're happy where you are, you stay there, naturally. Because you weren't content with what you're doing, you hadn't so developed that beautiful energy of happiness in the task. And also that you get into the habit of valuing all those little areas where you wander off to, your nice little playgrounds. I remember this person who I met in Sydney. She was actually grown up in Wat Buddha Dhamma, this monastery where I gave the retreat in Sydney. And she said that as a kid they had all these little hiding places, special places for the little kids who used to live there. And each one of us has got our little like special places where we go running off to when we suffer. And this is where we go wandering off to, little playgrounds in our mind. And that's where we wander off to. There's certain areas, we always wander off to those areas, special areas for ourselves. Know that. We're wandering off to those areas because we think there's good fun in there. There's not good fun in here, doing the actual meditation. That's why we're wandering off. So investigate that. See why. Because when you investigate and see why and see what's going on, then you have the power to stop that in future. You start to look. So those little areas where I keep wandering off to, a beautiful time in my childhood, or fantasies about the future, or dreams about this, that and the other. So what is this anyway? It's just a complete waste of time. It's futile. Let's go back to reality. And let's see if I can develop the contentment in the moment. That where you go wandering off to becomes valueless. where you are becomes valuable. Whatever's worth most value, that's what you're always inclined towards. So this is one of the ways of investigating. And as soon as you see that, so whenever you start to see yourself wandering off there again, you say, I've already investigated, that's a waste of time, stop. You see what's going on, and you see how to stop it. So investigate at that time. It's a good way of developing a little bit of insight meditation. And then, go back to the meditation object. And what you said was very good. Make your resolution again. Tell the mindfulness, okay, stay awake. Don't do that again. And now stay with the breath, or stay with the present moment, or stay with the silence. And but don't scold the mindfulness too much. Don't start kicking the gatekeeper around, because the gatekeeper will just resign and just go somewhere else, get another job with somebody else. So you've got to be firm, but be sort of non-violent towards your mindfulness. Does that answer the question? Yes. You say you're really stubborn and bloody-minded with your willpower. So you've got it or you haven't. It doesn't work for you. It does if you keep going. And if you make a reasonable goal, sometimes people make unreasonable goals for themselves with their willpower. They think, okay, as a boy, well, I'm going to play soccer for England. And it's completely unreasonable. Sometimes because we've made unreasonable goals in the past, we've lost our faith in willpower. We've been frustrated, disappointed. And because of that we think that willpower or setting goals has no purpose. So it's just going to create more suffering. I don't want to do it anymore. However, you should know that reasonable goals are really great to set for yourself. Goals of today which you can achieve. And because once you actually set a goal and you achieve it, it gives you enormous confidence and a sense of self-worth. A sense of I can do it, and a sense of power, and that needs to be developed if you're going to develop meditation. So usually if you have difficulty with this, set yourself small goals first of all. When you achieve those small goals, praise yourself, give yourself a treat. For example, if you've never been able to sit for an hour in meditation, so I'm going to sit for an hour this year. I'm going to sit for an hour. And if you do sit for an hour and you achieve it, give yourself an extra cup of coffee. Just go up there into the kitchen, make yourself a cup of coffee and toast yourself. Congratulations, well done. And drink it all down. Or have an extra sweet after the meal. Because this is just basic common sense. If you give yourself reward, it's encouraging. So if your willpower succeeds, give yourself a small party. And this is how you encourage willpower. It's what happens with willpower is people fail, they get punishment, they feel depressed, they feel frustrated, and eventually they just, willpower means failure, and failure means punishment, and just the whole thing, I don't want any more of this. So willpower is an important force in meditation and in life, whatever you want to achieve, and it has to be cultivated in the right way, and always give it a little bit of a celebration when it's achieved its goal. If you get into a jhana, you can come into my room and I'll toast you with a good cup of tea. If you get fully enlightened, we'll just have a big party in here. Get out the funny hats and streamers. Whatever. Yeah. So, this is what we actually do. Does that make any sense to you? Okay. Any other questions before we finish off this morning? Going. Okay. So, if you've had a good sit this morning, go and have a nice cup of coffee. If you get enlightened this morning, you're saying, I have to tell Bianca to make some more sweets. anyhow, so that's this morning's talk. We've got the interviews, and again, as usual, 10 minutes late.